Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Dennis Hahn. As Chief Strategy Officer at Liquid, Dennis is responsible for the methodologies that Liquid uses to address the strategic challenges of clients. Dennis leads teams of strategists across all Liquid offices, providing expertise, mentoring, and consulting on a wide range of significant strategic branding initiatives for clients that include John Deere, HP, Microsoft, Motorola, NASDAQ, PayPal, and Walmart. Prior to joining Liquid, Dennis spent 10 years as the President and Chief Strategy Officer of ID Branding, a multidisciplinary agency that grows meaningful brands for consumers and employees. It was here that he worked closely with cultural anthropologists to pioneer methods that help organizations enculturate their brands with their employees and customers. Working with the leadership teams of companies like Microsoft, Intel, and Symantec, SAIF, and Mercy, Dennis has provided his expertise to create alignment and commitment to organization-wide brand culture programs. Dennis holds a bachelor's degree in graphic design from Portland State University. He is also an adjunct professor at PSU for 8 years, where he taught strategy through the university's Professional Development Center. Dennis has spoken at numerous conferences about branding and strategy and has written on the subject of brand culture. Dennis, welcome to On Brand.
Thanks, Nick. I'm glad to be here.
I always like to throw myself under the bus. Our podcast listeners won't notice the mistake that I made in reading your bio when I got to the word enculturate. So I have, for some reason, felt the need to call it out right here, right now. But on the off chance that that is a fairly critical word in the sentence describing who you are and what you do, tell me a bit more about what that kind of inflection point about how you do what you do is. What does it mean to enculturate brands with their employees and customers?
Oh, that's a really great question. And it's an odd word, I will admit. But it's one that is apt, I think, for really what we're trying to do in building brand culture. And just to sort of level set, you know, when we talk about brand culture, it's also two weird words put together. But it's really about this idea when there's brand belief shared between a company, its employees, and its customers, a circuit of authenticity gets created, and that is what we call a brand culture. So therefore, to enculturate, what we do is we start by defining the brand, like most brand consultancies do. But then we take it a step further and we try and bring that into the organization, the workplace culture. There, that is the act of enculturation of the brand. And we try and get the employees steeped in the brand itself so they understand how to deliver on the brand's promise to customers. And that's what we mean by enculturation.
Well, that's pretty powerful. And I think brand strategy keeps many up at night enough, just the defining part about that. But you talking about taking things a step further. And I think this is a conversation I as host of a branding podcast, it seems like for a while, for a majority of my history, some nearly 200 episodes in here, this wasn't a subject that came up frequently, but I'd say lately it has. And I think it's interesting because brands sometimes get siloed off in marketing, culture sometimes gets siloed off in HR, and these two things are much bigger than the departments where they too often are sent to live and sometimes die.
Yeah, that can definitely happen. We say the new power trio in brand culture is the CMO, the CHRO, and the CEO. And together, those three really steer the organizational brand culture that it's trying to build.
Yeah, and those are areas that have not always overlapped, marketing and HR. So how can we foster better bridges between these groups?
Well, that's a great question. So the way we start with that is we want to level set everybody on the same platform. And So for the CMO, it's obviously the brand. That's where the CMOs live typically. For the CHRO, though, it's the organizational culture, right? So we create what we call a culture platform, and that connects to the brand platform. So therefore, we create a unifying set of rules, if you will, that govern how both the brand will live outside in the world with customers, but also inside the organization with employees. And that's where we try and start to create a common language and a common framework for activating the brand with employees, which we call do it through employee experience.
So walk us through both of those. You talked about the culture platform and the brand platform.
Yeah.
Does it make sense to start with the brand platform?
It does, absolutely. Because we believe that if it's a brand culture we're trying to build, then brand is really at the center. We call it the brand beliefs. So we do an outside-in, inside-out kind of approach. So we actually start by designing and identifying the customer for the brand. That's what we call the tribe. I know you've interviewed Marty Neumeyer before from Liquid, and he's a big proponent of tribes. So we define the tribe first. Then we build the brand and design the brand for that tribe. Once that's in place, then we say, okay, so how do we take this brand strategy and now apply it to the organization? That's where we create the brand, the culture platform. And so it is connected in that way. And then lastly, we then identify the employee tribe, the ideal employee that's going to serve that brand and that customer ultimately. So there's a through line, as you can see, from employee to company to brand to customer.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you articulate those layers in that way, it does make a lot of sense to really think about, and yet it seems as though we miss this a great deal.
Well, they're not, like you said earlier, it's not natural to connect these things, and many organizations focus on and agencies too. They'll focus on the external brand as a thing, or they'll focus on the culture and the employees as a thing. But bringing those together is really where the magic is in creating an authentic brand at the end of the day.
So, tell me about the you just said the A word there. Authenticity is something that I feel like we hear a lot about. We nod along with, but how do we get our arms around something as abstract as authenticity?
Yeah, no, that's really good, especially in the world of branding, where I think a lot of people are skeptical, where you're trying to create this external image of the brand, right? And that's the way it used to be, right? And you know, in the 90s, you know, ad agencies were masters at creating that image. That was sort of what I call like the golden era of modern advertising was in the 90s. You know, the Nike ads and all those amazing brands that were out there, and we wanted to kind of be those brands, but in the 2000s, the internet exposed what those companies were really doing, right? And often what they were doing was not in support of what their image was. And so people naturally became very skeptical of advertising and what these brands were really about. So to be authentic, you really have to go to what your purpose is as an organization. What really matters? What is it you're trying to serve? Who are you trying to serve? Why? It's the why are you trying to do it?
Right.
And once you identify that, then you can align the brand strategy to really the need of both the customer but also the employee. And if you tie all that together, we create what we call the circuit of authenticity. It has to be real, though. It can't be manufactured.
Well, you talked about people being skeptical, especially when the authenticity thing comes comes from the branding people, from the agency, from the marketing department, and it occurs to me, you talk about that circuit and the importance of in everything that we've talked about here about the employee, and it seems like a lot of times that critical party, that the employees can be among the most skeptical sometimes. So how can you connect in an authentic way your brand platform with what you're trying to do with the culture platform in a way that's not you're always going to be met with the eye rolling employee, but but how you can appeal to most with this brand platform, with the culture platform, in an authentic way that means something to them.
Yeah, well, you've heard it talked about on your show before about how values is kind of the epicenter of organizational culture. And values, you know, can be very powerful if they're lived every day, right? If not just a plaque on the wall or the mouse pad, you know, where they're just listed there. But if the company really stands behind those values and the employees know it, you know, they're very keen to know when an organization, when leadership supports these values or doesn't. And if you can help the employees see the connection between that and the brand it's trying to be in the world, then they're going to come along with you. But I'll tell you, they are skeptical. We worked years ago, we worked with a healthcare chain called Mercy in the Midwest, a pretty big Catholic healthcare system. And the doctors, the physicians were so skeptical. We were saying, oh, we're rebranding you. And they're like, oh, and they were just arms folded. And, you know, you're going to make us be something we're not. And once we kind of broke through that sort of bias and we said, no, we're trying to just surface the best of who you already are. And we started talking about values. And at the end of our conversations, they were just like, yeah, they started to, that melted away. And they started to understand really what our intentions were in building their brand. It was really from the core of what they really believed in. And that was super important to them.
You know, I had a consulting call last week with a client who was struggling with the same thing with gaining buy-in. And I think that what you just said bears calling out, that a lot of times a huge disconnect is you're going to try to graft something onto who we are that doesn't line up. And I think if we and those listening have done our jobs correctly, it should be a better way of telling the story of who we already are.
Oh yeah. I mean, look, as the outsider, right, as the agency or the consultant coming in from the outside, you have to really understand the heritage and the culture of the organization you're working with. You have to respect and honor that. And you have to, once you understand what it is, you take the time, then yeah, you invite stakeholders in the organization to participate in that process of then shaping it. We do it through a process we call swarming, which is our workshop methodology. But, you know, we'll spend anywhere from 2 days to even up to a week with stakeholders inside of a company, really co-creating the brand platform and the culture platform. And that's a really huge investment. But you start to bring those stakeholders along the journey with you, and you're not selling in, you're co-creating.
Are you enjoying this conversation about branding? If so, I'd love to bring my Brand Now keynote speech to your next conference or corporate event. Based on my popular book, Brand Now, this talk breaks down the 7 dynamics of building a standout brand in our crowded, distracted world. Entertaining and educational, your audience will learn, laugh, and leave with ideas they can implement right away. Learn more, including watching video and viewing popular presentation topics at nickwestergaard.com/speaking. That's nickwestergaard with 2 A's .com/speaking. Now back to the show. So you talked about this swarming process of yours, and it's the power of a great name. I have to know what that involves.
Oh, man. Well, first of all, I want to give credit where credit is due. I know you've interviewed Marty Neumeier before.
Yeah.
And Marty's coined that term, swarming. He's a great turn of the phrase, right? But we really embody it every day at Liquid, and it's really design thinking led. Well, it was a little bit of lean startup too. So design thinking and lean startup had a baby. It would be what we call Silicon Valley thinking, which we deploy through our swarming technique. And so it's really a way of engaging our clients through a process whereby we give them activities and exercises, and we co-create together to come up with the solution. And so swarming, where it comes from, is you take a bunch of different minds, and you gather them together and you swarm the problem, right? You bring everybody together in a rapid fashion, and you come up with divergent thinking. So we break people up into lots of groups, and we'll often swarm with groups from 16 to 50 people. And by breaking them down, though, you create a lot of different ideas, and then you converge them, you bring them back together to really get to the best ideas. And that way, people are on the journey. We may not use everyone's idea, and we don't, you know, cook the chili together, so to speak, in the room, but we get a pretty good idea of where we're going. And everyone feels like they have ownership and some skin in the game on defining the brand and the culture.
That's great. That's great. So talking about defining the brand and the culture, who are some of your go-to examples of who does this really well?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. You know, one of the brands that I really admire, and especially lately, is REI. And the reason I cite them is I think they're a great example of a company that's living its brand culture. And Opt Outside, which we're all pretty familiar with,
yeah.
You know, it's really an example of the company taking a stand based on its beliefs that a life lived outdoors is a life well lived, as they say. So the company closes on Black Friday. They have for the past 3 years, gives employees the day off, and encourages them to go outside and not be caught up in the fray of shopping, you know, after eating your turkey. And it encourages their customers to do the same. And now they've created a movement around this where they've influenced other companies to do the same and participate in this. And so I feel like they're a living example, breathing example of brand culture. And it's interesting. It's not just the feel-good aspect of it. A lot of people that we talk to, they feel like this is like, you know, it's very aspirational and we're saying, no, it is aspirational. But it's also it's profit. You know, purpose equals profit. You know, so we're not here to save the whales. We're here to make great companies that people feel really good about. And those two things can go hand in hand.
Love it. That's a great example, and certainly someone who does a great job of defining that brand, but also the risk of sounding cliche, living it too.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's where the rubber hits the road, right? It's this idea that it's more important what a company does than what it says. So that's what people pay attention to.
And that brings me back to something you said very early on in talking about brand activation. And you brought it to experience. And I always think of the definition there of the experience being the brand promise delivered.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So where does, I mean, I struggle because I think sometimes these words, especially in branding conversations, can get used and overused and abused, like authenticity, like story, like experience. So what is the role of experience for brands today?
Well, for me, and for the Liquid point of view, we really feel that the brand meaning that you're trying to create with your audiences is best built through the experiences that they actually have with the brand. And that's for employees and customers, both. So, yes, communications are an important part of the mix, but ultimately, it's like you said, it's the experience that people have that is going to create the most impact, positive or negative, right? So that's where the stories are told. That's where people start talking, and that's where the brand is really felt, and it's more emotionally charged because people had an active part in it. So we feel that the experiences are the means in which we activate the brand strategy and the culture to really get people to understand what it is we want them to feel and think about the brand.
Yeah, I mean, as we talk about all of these things and kind of start scratching at some of the relationships between them, we talk about the brand platform, the culture platform, and all of this should yield an experience that ultimately becomes – what your brand is. And I feel like we back into the definitions that are all over the place, that as much as we try to craft what our brand is, that it's ultimately what our customers think about us. But
right.
What they think about us is a result of everything else that we've just talked about, culminating in that experience, that means that you just noted.
Yeah, and it is easy to think of all these buzzwords as just that, but if you can really execute these things and orchestrate them in a way where the dots get connected, that's really what a lot of organizations struggle with at the end of the day. It's not that they don't know what to do necessarily. They may just not know how to connect everything together in a way that makes sense for people. And what I mean by people is both the employees and the customers, right? So they have to understand how to navigate the brand, what are the cues that we want them to have. And that's what those are some of the operating principles we work with culture, for example. We think of the experiences guided by systems, rituals, and cues. And rituals are those things that you do that over and over and that reinforce behaviors that you want employees to have. And those can be experiences in many ways. They are. But the cues are also the things that help people to remind them of what it is they're serving at the end of the day. So there's a lot of things that you can do to help guide these experiences in a more intentional and meaningful way.
Well, I think that's such an important thing, because I think the other challenge, I think I talked about it when we got to authenticity being abstract. Stories abstract, experiences abstract, but these guides, these things that we can do help to ground the act of experience making, which is what everyone's job really kind of comes down to, right?
Yeah, if you understand what the tent poles are of experiences at large, then you can start to operationalize those in a better way. And that's the point of strategy, right? You need principles and guides that help you to deliver something that ultimately ladders up to one thing, and that's what you want the brand to stand for. And so having these things like system rituals or cues inside of a company, or for customers, we use a construct called people, places, and products. And once you have those tent poles set up, then you have a framework to operate within when you're building that, you know, that digital experience, right? Or you're trying to create a really great retail or brick and mortar experience for people when they come into a store, because now you have a way to kind of tie things together and hook it back into the brand.
That's great. Well, as we start to wrap up, it is time for me to ask you a brand that has made you smile recently.
Yeah, I knew you were going to ask me that. Yeah. And, you know, I really, for a guy who travels a lot like I do, I am always pleasantly surprised how well Alaska Airlines continues to come into its own and be very customer focused. I do smile. I usually don't smile when I get on airplanes.
Right.
I don't know about you, right? Mm. But I'm, you know, and they always make it a great experience. And they've really, since they bought Virgin America, I've seen this brand really evolve and, you know, a little more personality. Not like we're not trying to be Southwest, but I really feel like they're really catering to customers, investing in the experience and new technology on planes and all the things that make it suck less to travel. And I feel like they're really owning it. So I do smile when I get on those flights.
That's a great example. And you talk about them emerging and coming into their own. And I am fairly certain, I may be wrong, I hear a lot of smiles week in and week out, but I feel like they've come up recently as someone else provoking a smile there. So these, I feel like we can connect this back to the experience that they're creating.
Absolutely. Yes.
So, Dennis, where can folks go to find more about who you are and what you do?
Well, probably a couple places. One is on liquidagency.com. You know, we have, you can see my bio, you can see all of the work that we do and more on the philosophy of brand culture there and how we actually do that. And the other is just on good old fashioned LinkedIn, right? Dennis F. Hahn, that you'll see a little bit more broader purview about me. And if you really want to see a little bit more about my personality, you can go to vivalacocktail.com and you can see my mixology passions there. So there's a few places you can find out about who I am.
Well, that is too much fun and a wonderful, interesting hook to end on. So we will link up to all of those in our show notes. Dennis, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Absolutely, Nick. It was great to finally meet you. Thanks for having me.
And remember, you can subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Speaking of Apple Podcasts, if we've created an amazing experience here and you feel like telling others about what you heard, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.